The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball, and welcome into another edition of Clown Takes. We've been scouring the internet, we've been scouring different Twitter accounts, but actually one dropped right into our lap courtesy of our very own general manager, Craig Breslow. So he will be the target this week, and not just him, we've got some other members of the Red Sox organization that have been speaking this week, obviously referring to the trade deadline, all sorts of stuff like that. So there's plenty of blame and plenty of ire from us to go around. So I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamond. Nick, how we doing?
How you doing, Jason? I'm doing great.
Doing pretty well. And this is your first Clown Take show, so this should be pretty interesting for you. Get to throw some heat on some of the members of the organization for the first time.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to do is just talk crap and come down on people that deserve it, you know? Like, Breslow said a couple weird things, Sam Kennedy said a couple weird things, so we'll see what happens in this episode.
Well, then you're definitely on the right show, that's for sure. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Well, doing all right. Still trying to read between the lines and read the tea leaves as far as what this team is trying to do, but that's what we'll try to get to the bottom of here on Clown Takes.
Yeah, absolutely. And many of you know kind of what we're referring to, but in case you don't, so just to refresh everyone's memory, Craig Breslow was on the Mass Live podcast recently, obviously talking about the state of the team going forward with the trade deadline approaching. All-Star break is underway pretty much. And he basically said that he's going to need another 2 weeks to quote unquote pick a lane in terms of his approach towards the trade deadline, whether they are going to be sellers or buyers. Which we all found kind of odd because the Red Sox are playing really good baseball right now. They're, you know, currently 10 games over 500, third place in the American League East. They're creeping up on New York. They're creeping up on Baltimore. If the, you know, season were to end today, they're pretty much in the wild card. So we thought it was kind of odd that he still needs time to quote unquote pick a lane when the team is out there winning games right in front of his very eyes. So definitely kind of a weird comment. I think a lot of people, you know, definitely raise an eyebrow at it. So Terry, I'll let you kind of get the ball rolling here. I mean, you heard the same thing. You've been watching every game just like we've been. And I think obviously, you know, us on this show, we care about winning and we want the team to go to the playoffs. So I imagine him saying that he still needs time to pick a lane kind of irked you a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we had a dud of a winter. I mean, we added O'Neill, essentially no starters since Giolito went down. You know, I guess, well, you got some decent outings from Criswell, but the team has overachieved. And, we didn't think we would be here in July. We didn't think we'd be having these conversations. If you go back to some of those April shows, I mean, we were talking about, you know, will Alex Cora still be here? Will he just want to quit by July because this team is so trash? And it's almost like Breslow doesn't deserve to be in this position because they've done it entirely on this team overachieving, you know, Jarren Duran becoming an absolute stud. you know, one of the best leadoff guys, one of the best outfielders, really, in Major League Baseball. Rafaela breaking through, the best nine-hole hitter. So you got the best one-hole hitter, you got the best nine-hole hitter, essentially. And here we are, and you're just wondering, will they get it right? Do they even know what they're doing? Because last winter, it just didn't seem like Breslow had a feel for it. And now that we're here, we were just talking about, you know, off the air before we started recording, and I may have even mentioned this on an earlier episode, but if Theo Epstein, Ben Cherington, and Dave Dombrowski were 10 games above 500, they would not hesitate to say, yeah, we're buying. We love this team. We're excited about what's going on. And yeah, we want to add to it, and we want to make a run for the deadline. And you don't even have to say, yeah, we want to make a big splash at the deadline. Just say you're excited, you're motivated, you're looking at a lot of options, and you're confident you're going to find some viable solutions here. And that's not what we're hearing. You're still getting mixed messages, and I don't know if Breslow knows how to do it.
Nick, what was your reaction to Breslow's comments?
So I'll say this first. He did say, we're not interested in buying and selling at the same time, which I really do like, which Chaim Bloom trying to do, kind of navigate both in the past. But the fact that he said we need two more weeks to figure out what's going on for this team, if the Red Sox get swept by the Royals, there's still seven games over 500. If you told me in January if this team was ever seven games over 500, I would beg to add. I mean, you get swept by the Royals, you're seven games out of over 500. You're probably two back of the wild card, one back of the wild card. You still add. And you've got 4 days off the All-Star break. What is that, July 21st when you come back? Like, what do you have? Like, unless you go 2-13 in the next 15 games, you have to add, and you got to go for it and at least add a starting pitcher that could help this team at least try to get to 85, 86, 87 wins to make a playoff push.
To me, it's really annoying that Breslow's coming out and saying something like that. And then when he was when he joined the broadcast team on the Monster that game, where, you know, O'Brien and Uke were talking to him, you know, he didn't say the whole pick a lane thing, but he said, well, we're still doing our computations or something like that. He basically said, we're still doing our analysis in terms of, you know, what we're going to do with the deadline, which to me, it's like, so you're looking at more spreadsheets and you're doing more computer crap and more, you know, analytic stuff. And you're not just watching what's going on with your very own eyes. You know, like that's where I'm like, kind of like what you said, Terry, I don't know if Breslow can do the job, because you have to have a certain feel for what your team is doing. It can't all just be analytics. You've got to have a feel for what's going on, you know, on the field on a daily basis. And it's not like the Red Sox are just beating up on bad teams, right? Okay, you take two out of three from Oakland because you're supposed to, but they're beating the Yankees. They're beating other good teams in the American League. So they're showing you that this is legit. What's happening here is legit. It's not a fluke. It's not a blip on the radar. You know, Jaron Duran has turned himself into an all-star. David Hamilton has turned himself into a Rookie of the Year candidate. Like, it's one of those things where they are playing above where we expected, but I don't think that it's unsustainable. You know, I think David Hamilton has figured something out with the bat, and he always had the speed. So he's getting on base more regularly. He's using his speed to produce more offense. Sedan Rafaela, who you extended because you believe in him so much, is showing you he's still great defensively, and now he's starting to drive the ball, and he's starting to hit for power, and that average is starting to creep up. So this is all real, and you're doing all of this without Tristan Casas. And, you know, we talked about it on another show. You're probably going to be without Casas for really most of the rest of the season. it sounds like he's a long way away. So that's the perfect opportunity to say, okay, Dom Smith, who you picked up, and give Bresl credit, they went out, you know, Casas went down, he brought in two first basemen, Garrett Cooper and Dom Smith. And we all said, okay, good, it's what you should do. Cooper didn't work out, but Dom Smith kind of has. He's had a couple of rough patches, but for the most part, he's been a consistent performer. And he's really kind of stabilized that first base void that Casas left when he got hurt. So that should be evidence enough for Craig Breslow to just go out there and buy. You don't have to make a big splash, like Nick said. You don't have to go out and get Luis Robert, right? The Phillies are probably going to go get him. And honestly, he's probably going to be not worth whatever trade package they end up giving up. Fine. Let them go out and get Luis Robert. Let all these other teams try to make big splashes. You don't have to do that. But can you get, I don't know, a middle infielder, right-handed bat, who can play defense? Go talk to the White Sox and get Paul DeJong. He's not having a bad year. Sitting 260 with power, and he can play good defense. That's all you need. And you don't have to give up a top prospect to get him. You probably can get him for a song at this point. The White Sox don't care. They're looking to sell whoever they can. Go get someone like that. Go get, you know, a mid-level starter somewhere. Now, that one you might have to pay a little bit more for, but it really helps in terms of, again, like not having to call up Cooper Criswell, you know, every other time. You know, you have someone else in your rotation who can at least give you 5-6 innings of decent baseball, and that'll help you down the stretch. So the fact that he's waiting is like kind of infuriating, because other teams are not going to wait. The Yankees have, you know, there was a report this, you know, this week that was like the Yankees are already talking to the Reds about some of their relievers. The Yankees are trying to bolster up their bullpen because their bullpen's been letting them down. So Cashman's not waiting. I guarantee you that the Dodgers won't wait. You know, Houston's not going to wait. Houston is starting to win ball games now. They're going to be aggressive. So other teams around you are not going to wait. The Toronto Blue Jays are waving the white flag. They're basically saying, we're for sale. Come talk to us, you know, if you want anybody. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if someone makes a really bold move and tries to get Bo Bichette. Like, that's what other teams around you are doing. I don't like that Breslow's waiting, and it just feels like, I don't know if he's waiting because even ownership in the front office isn't sure what they want to do, and he's just kind of, you know, waiting for their call because maybe they're the ones really calling the shots here, or if he's just, again, it's another symptom of what Bloom had, where he's just, he can't pull the trigger when he needs to. And that's worrying, because that was my biggest criticism of Bloom, is that there were deals that he could have made, but he shied away from it and got hesitant, and other teams beat him to the punch. So I hope that's not the case with Breslow, but those comments were definitely a little concerning.
Analysis paralysis was the phrase that was kicked around a lot with Heim. He just couldn't pull the trigger on buying or selling. And he could have traded Chris Sale and got rid of all the money. The return wouldn't have been great, but you could have got rid of the contract. You could have had Edward Cabrera from the Marlins straight up for Justin Turner. He didn't do that. You know, we lost big time. And I've already said that Breslow botched the winter. And I really think whatever the end result is going to be is because of how badly the winter was handled versus how the deadline was handled. I mean, we could have just been in much better shape coming up to the deadline here, where it, you know, maybe you just need one piece versus two or three pieces. But I just, there's a lot that could go wrong. I think handling the trade deadline is way harder than, you know, the handling it over the winter, because as far as executives go in other front offices, asses are on the line. Like, the pressure's on for some teams, and teams tend to be more desperate in July than they are in the winter, because in the winter there, you know, executives tend to be somewhat optimistic. Well, it could work out pretty good. And then, you know, we've got all season to address it. And now you only got a couple of weeks to address it now. And who knows how rational the teams are going to be in terms of what they're expecting. Because we're seeing some teams hold on to their players that are going to walk because they don't want to get fleeced. Spitefully, they'll just hang on to them. So I don't know. Like, the other thing I'm thinking here is, does ownership feel validated by this run that we've had to the point where it's going to affect what we do this winter and what we do in the coming years? Do they think this type of a line, because this type of a lineup to me is an anomaly. If you trot out the same exact lineup next year, you're out of it early. There's no way the stars will align the same way they did this year. So if Breslow botches it, let's say we get a bat and we get a pitcher, and then we miss the playoffs anyway. Isn't that the worst case scenario? Because you didn't cash in on your assets and you weakened your farm and then still didn't get to the playoffs. And I'm just wondering, how does John Henry view that? Because he was, according to, you know, people around the team, he was pissed last year when we essentially just stood pat. He was pissed. And how's he going to react this year? I'm just wondering, what's the confidence level going to be with Breslow if at the end of the season, I keep saying he was their 11th choice. What happens if that's the type of performance he has?
Yeah, I mean, that's the worry, is that if he stands pat again and the Red Sox for some reason collapse in the second half, and I really do think it would take collapse-ish type behavior for them to miss the playoffs, because they've had such a good first half. And, you know, someone would have, like, Devers would have to get hurt for them to, like, really start to collapse or something like that. It's just, I don't see everyone just suddenly going backwards, you know, after the All-Star break. So it really is just as simple as, you don't have to make the big splash. You don't have to trade away Roman Anthony or anything like that. But I don't know, can you get something? Like, and I mean something legit. Like I mentioned Paul DeJong earlier, like someone like that. I don't want some 27-year-old journeyman reliever that no one's heard of, but Breslow's going to sit there and tell us, well, we really like his stuff and, you know, we feel like we can fix him. It's got to be something more than that. So it's just, again, like, is he as hesitant as Bloom? I hope not, because that would spell disaster for this deadline.
Nick, what are your thoughts?
So my biggest problem with Bloom was, I think he was terrified to lose a deal. And I'm worried that Breslow is the same way. But the one saving grace with Breslow is he was in a pennant winning clubhouse in 2013 that went out and acquired a Jake Peavy and got a guy that helped the clubhouse and helped the team win. So I hope that experience will tell him, hey, I want to fuel this team, go get a starting pitcher, because I don't think a hitter is going to happen. I really don't. But I think he can live by his own experience and say, hey, like when I was in 2013 and we went out and got Jake Peavy, the clubhouse, like it sparked something new. And then we went out and won a World Series. But I also think he's scared to lose a deal. So I think there's zero chance you trade one of your Kyle Teals, your Roman Anthonys, and your Marcelo Myers. I think that's like a 0.001% chance that happens. And if it does, it falls in your lap. You get a Garrett Crochet and the Orioles don't go out and bid for him like you think they will, or the Phillies don't go out and bid for him like you think they will. So realistically, I think it's a 4 or 5 starter, and that's probably it. And then, like you said about if the Red Sox don't make the postseason, it might be a complete collapse. I don't really believe that. Like, I can see Astros win 85, 86 games. I think the Mariners win 85, 86. 87 games. I think these 90 plus games. So we'll see what happens. I think the Twins are a really good team still. So I don't think it's a complete collapse for the Red Sox to miss the postseason.
And, you know, in terms of just the back end starter, I mean, that could be a Trevor Rogers from Miami. And like you said, maybe Breslow is afraid of losing the deal. I think Miami's kind of a stupid team. I don't think they're run very well. So, like, go that avenue. Go look, you know, go talk to teams that are run poorly and go get one of their guys, and you're not likely to lose a deal in that case. You know, it doesn't have to be Garrett Crochet. But, yeah, is he maybe afraid of losing the trade? I think a lot of GMs are. And certainly Breslow in his first year in a tumultuous environment, I could see that definitely being the case.
You know, looking at the current situation here, the insane thing to me is the Red Sox are only 5.5 games out of the division right now. Yankees are still skidding, and I don't know why. I mean, that rotation should be pretty solid. They should be able to figure that out. They've got a decent offense. I mean, obviously, Soto and Judge. Volpe has had a good year. I think he is slumping a little bit at the moment. But Alex Verdugo hasn't been quite as good as he was in Boston, but he's been serviceable. You know, he's up there in doubles and still not striking out a ton. And, you know, they should be able to figure it out. I don't know what Baltimore is going to do at the deadline. They were linked to somebody big. Maybe it was Crochet, actually. So we'll see. They just got Creamer back from, I forget what he was out with. It might have been his triceps or something. It wasn't super major, but that's a team that I think is probably still gonna, I like their chances of getting back on track and then going on a nice run here. So the Red Sox, nonetheless, 5.5 games back of the division. Let me pull up the wild card real quick. In possession at the moment of that third wild card, the Royals, who were about to play, and we're recording this on Thursday night, just one game back from the Red Sox. So if they have a big series here, they can take that thing back. And I think the Astros are going to get better. And I think they can actually win the West. And then you're battling the Mariners for a wild card. So I think either way, the Astros or the Mariners are going to be in play for that third wild card. And the Rays are, they're three teams out of that, and they're probably going to sell. So realistically, it's just the Astros, the Royals, the Red Sox, and the Mariners, depending on how the West plays out. Those are the only teams that are within striking distance now. So I want to be impressed. I want Breslow to impress me. I want to see something unique out of nowhere. Leading up to the 2018 deadline, that was back when it was just Jeremy and I. And I said, we're going to get a pitcher, but it'll probably be someone you don't really expect. And that's exactly what happened. It ended up being Nathan Eovaldi. He wasn't on anybody's radar. And the consensus was, okay, well, he's serviceable. And, you know, Sale and Price were doing pretty good, especially Sale. Rick Porcello was having his second best year. So when you throw Eovaldi into that mix, it was fine. And I just want to see him get creative and kind of, he doesn't have to win the month against all the other executives, but he needs to have a big month here. He needs to flip the script. And I don't even know, like, I'm not a Breslow guy. He pisses me off every time he opens his mouth because he's extremely political. He doesn't answer the questions. And we're not really used to that. Haim was like that at first, but I felt like the further Haim went, the more transparent he was. We were still pissed at, you know, the decisions, but I felt like he was a little bit more transparent. And I just don't know how you survive if you're not getting it done, you know, if you're not winning the trades and you're not winning over the press. I don't see how you survive in Boston.
Yeah, and two of those teams you mentioned, so Houston, they're starting to win games again. Granted, they're playing like Miami, and you know, they've gotten a few cupcakes here lately, but they are starting to tear it up again. They're doing it without Kyle Tucker, too, who's one of their best offensive players. He's probably going to come back after the All-Star break, so their lineup is going to get a boost. They'll probably go out, try to get some pitching. Seattle is always aggressive, both at the trade deadline and in the offseason. They have an abundance of young pitching that they don't have room for all those guys, and they need offense. They need someone in the middle infield. I could see them like trying to go get Bo Bichette to play shortstop. J.P. Crawford is having a down year. They've a lot of young pitching to spare. Like Seattle, they just always have that random splash move that they make. So bear in mind, like, that could happen. Kansas City too. Like, I think they'll make a move, probably not a splash move, but they're going to do something because they are contending and they just paid Bobby Witt all this money. They brought in Seth Lugo and he's having a Cy Young year. So they're going to go for it. All three of those teams that you're contending with, they're all going to make moves. So you can't just stand pat and say, well, you know, guys are overperforming and, you know, we feel good about the direction of the club and whatever political BS answer he's going to try and give you. It's just, it's not going to be good enough. And I know he's afraid of losing the trade. I know he's probably afraid of losing prospects, but as I keep saying, you can't keep all of them. I know that, you know, Boston's farm system has gotten so much better and that's great. You can't keep all these guys. You can't. I complain all the time about how we have like 20,000 shortstops in our farm system. And it's an exaggeration, but it's also kind of true. Like this Nazan Zanatello that they drafted, I think what, last year? I mean, he's already their number 9 prospect, but Marcelo Mayer is your number 1. So right there, that's not going to work. I mean, unless Zanatello is going to move to second base or something in the future. They've got this kid, Christian Campbell, down in AAA, who's, you know, tearing the cover off the ball. He's an infielder. Nick York is tearing the cover off the ball. He's an infielder. So at some point, and Terry, you know, you keep saying it too, a painful trade is coming. A trade that Red Sox fans don't want to see is coming. And whether that's someone from the big league club, like a Willy or Abreu, or whether it's someone from the minor leagues, like a Nick York, who everyone keeps saying, why hasn't he been called up yet? You know, maybe he's the one that gets dealt in a package. Maybe it's this Christian Campbell kid, who everyone's fallen in love with. Maybe they sell high on him because he kind of came out of nowhere. It's a double-edged sword. I want them to make a move. I want them to be aggressive, but I am also cautioning Red Sox fans. It might be painful. They might have to deal someone that you weren't ready to part with. But do you want to win, or do you just want to see the prospect rankings go up? Because, frankly, I want the team to win. I want them to go to the playoffs. I could care less about the prospect ranking. I don't want it to tank, but, you know, I want to see his team playing baseball in October. So they may have to make a difficult decision in order to make that happen.
So Terry brought up the Eovaldi trade in 2018. And in 2018, there was a big difference in the playoffs. There's no longer, or in 2018, there was only the one game playoff for the wild card. And now they have three teams who make the wild card. And I think it has eliminated so many sellers and it's made GM's jobs way harder. So I think that's where Breslow's getting at, where he wants to evaluate two more weeks. But at 10 games over 500, you absolutely go for it. I know there's less sellers now. There might be a team like the Rangers who are like 4 or 5 games under 500 that might have sold in the past, which they're not going to sell anymore. or a team like the Reds, who are like three games under 500, who might have sold in the past, who might go for it now. There's a lot less options, but Breslow has to go out there and identify a guy that can make this team better. And if he doesn't, that is his fault. It's not Sam Kennedy's. It's not John Henry's, because John Henry's going to give Breslow $13 million to go up to the luxury tax. I promise you he gives him that $13 million. He won't go above it, but I think he'll give him that $13 million to at least add to this team to make them a playoff team. So if you can, if Breslow can go out there and improve this team for $13 million, then good for him. If he can't, then we deserve to criticize him.
That's an excellent point. You can't blame anything that happens this month on John Henry. And you have to believe that they see those empty seats. When you look at the upper deck, it's never full on any game. And that hurts my heart because that's my favorite place to sit. The Coke seats, I just love sitting up there for some reason. If they're right on the end, you essentially have your own concession stand, your own bathrooms. The lines are short. It's my favorite place to sit. But and then you'll see blotches of empty seats, you know, in the outfield and along the grandstands and all that. You have to believe that John Henry wants to win at this point. You know, he wants to flip the script, flip the narrative. I think at the same time, I think he's afraid of what we're afraid of. We'll make moves and then we won't be good enough. So as much as he wants to win, I think he's afraid of the consequences as well. But I don't see standing pat as an option here. This team has played their ass off and they deserve reinforcements. They deserve a front office that's as committed as they are, is what they deserve. So we'll see, but it's all on Breslow. And Sam Kennedy said today on WEI, he said Breslow is the ultimate decider on what happens here. He won't exceed the trade, the luxury tax, as Nick pointed out, but it's his ass at this point.
Yeah. I mean, if Kennedy is coming out saying that, then yeah, this is Breslow's real first test. And it will be this trade deadline. And it's a difficult one. But again, you know, this is why you took the job. You should be able to do it. So I agree with you. Standing pat is not an option. I think if he does that, he's kind of taking the safe way out. So we'll see. And you know, I know that he said, well, it depends on how the next 2 weeks go and how the team plays. I don't think the team's going to do anything different than what they've been doing, where they're winning games, they're winning series. I don't think they're going to tank. Like, they're not going to lose six in a row, right? They probably won't also win six in a row, but you know what I mean? They'll do enough to pretty much stay exactly where they are. So if he's undecided now, he better change that real quick, because I don't think anything drastic is going to change in the next 2 weeks. So,
and the other thing too, is it's going to be a double-edged sword, because they're going to take a PR hit when Cora doesn't come back, whether it's going to be the Red Sox fault. So I mean, Cora might decide to move on, but it's going to be because they didn't pay him. So they're going to take that hit. They don't want to take a hit where they botched July as well. And one thing I'd love to see, and I don't think we would see it because I think there is a code among executives, but wouldn't it be great if Dave Dombrowski just took a shot at the Red Sox if things do go sideways? You know, I would love to see it, because you know it would boil John Henry's blood to see his old executive times two, because they were together with the Marlins. But I don't know. I would just love to see that.
Oh, it'd be hilarious. And you know the Phillies are going to make a move. So, I mean, they're definitely going for it. Because
do they even have to, though? I mean, I think they will. But, man, they're just a wagon no matter what.
I think the Phillies do have to make a move. They don't have a fifth starter. Taiwan Walker has absolutely sucked.
He has, yeah.
And their left field position is basically a black hole. So they need to get a competent outfielder and then either move a reliever to the – hopefully Taiwan Walker will figure it out or move a reliever to the fifth spot. But in the playoffs, you don't need a five starter. I mean, they're making the playoffs no matter what, and they have four studs. So – do they really need to? No, but they probably will. They will.
They'll add something. It just won't necessarily be a blockbuster. But yeah, and I mean, Taiwan Walker's one of the few mistakes he's made. I mean, he gave him a lot of money and it just hasn't worked, but he hasn't made a ton of other mistakes. I've said over and over again, I don't think he should have signed Trey Turner. He'll probably be long gone by the time that contract really goes sideways, but and maybe that's why he signed him. But other than that, he's just been so good. He got the right manager in there. He got the pitching program turned around. Yeah, totally random question. I don't think we would do it. I don't think the Red Sox would do it because they have an intense phobia. But would you give? Oh, I forgot his name. Oh, here we go. Corbin Burnes. Would you give him the Aaron Nola contract from last year?
I'd give him more.
You'd give him more? Okay.
Yeah. What was Aaron Nola, like 7 years, 170 something?
175, yeah.
I think he – what is he, 31? I think he gets like 8 years, two something. Like I,
so add an extra year.
I think somebody's going to pay him. I mean, give him an extra year. Give him 220. I think he gets it. And he might get more than that. Who knows? David Price got more than that.
He got 217. Yeah, over that was a 7-year deal. Let me just see. The only thing was, and it was discussed all winter long, Burnes is some of his metrics were declining, specifically the strikeouts. Where's he at this year?
They definitely were declining, but he might be the All-Star game starter this year. I mean,
actually, it's he so. His strikeout per nine has gone down a point or more the last couple of years. Let's see, his Cy Young year, that was, let's see, 2021. He had a 12.6 strikeout per nine.
It's definitely gone down.
Yeah, 10.8 in 2022, 9.3 in 2023, 8.3 this year. So it's fallen. So I think it's a stretch to get him north of 200, I would say.
It is falling, but doesn't he still have like a 2.2 ERA? Like
close enough, 2.43, 19 starts. You're getting a guy that's durable, so you're getting that, but
yeah, I mean he's pitched 28, 33, 32 in the last 3 years. I mean, 2020 he had 12, that doesn't count.
Right.
And before that, he had 32 and 30. Like, he's never been hurt, which you could look at it in a bad way or a good way. Like, he's never been hurt, but he's also might be due. So, who knows?
I mean, he could be a guy that just evolves and, you know, figures it out and adapts to his later years. Charlie Morton would be an example of that. But we'll see. I mean, he's definitely a guy that's attractive to me as – in terms of adding, he is a Boris guy, so that's going to complicate it. You know, he's not signing until February 10th, right before they report, but we'll see.
I was going to say, you know, I would sign him, but I would loathe having to deal with Scott Boris, but I would suffer through to get Corbin Burnes. Yeah.
That's why I think Kyle Teal could be the guy we trade, just because you're like, Boris probably would take a pre-arb extension in year one or two, but after that, it's such a headache if he doesn't.
Yeah, it's definitely true.
Yeah.
All right. Any other final thoughts on Breslow, the deadline, any of that stuff? Mm-hmm. All good. All right. Well, we will wrap up this episode of Clown Takes. So everyone enjoy the Royal Series this weekend. Enjoy the All-Star break if you choose to watch. And we will be back with you guys for the second half of the season next week. So everyone have a good weekend. Take care.